Hello and welcome to a fresh new episode of Blue Waves with me, Jabri Dutt. Today I'm really excited because I have some company. No, it's not just my guest, but for a change, my colleague Daniela Tatalieva joins me in the moderator's seat. Hi, Daniela. Welcome to the club. How's it going?
Hi, thanks for having me here today. I work in the corporate communications team, supporting our locations outside of Germany. And one of my tasks is to scout the company for stories and projects we can tell the world about. Knowing the company really helps with that, and I've been at Drezzo for 7 years now.
Wow, 7 already. So really a veteran. And who do we have as our guest, Daniela?
Today, we are excited to meet Sala Lardo, who brings over 25 years of experience in the area of user experience and workplace consulting. Working across European markets in Finland, Switzerland, the Netherlands, the UK, and all this across different sectors. But her specialty lies in the ICT, life sciences, and energy industries. Sala is based in Amsterdam, and there couldn't be a more international guest to our podcast. As she speaks Finnish, Swedish, Dutch, English, French, and German, I hope I didn't miss anything. Sala, it is a pleasure to have you here with us. How are you today?
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. It's a great opportunity to have this chat together. And I really hope that we can capture some interesting ideas that will interest our listeners as well. Yep, the weather's good today here in Amsterdam. And the mood is very good. Like you all know, Amsterdam's very relaxed and people are happy. And people are really happy that we are sort of past Corona a little bit and going back to the normal or the new normal. But we can talk a little bit more about new normal, I suppose.
Exactly. Well, probably well past a Corona, but a well past summer as well, because autumn is setting in definitely here in Germany. But it's good to hear that in Amsterdam, things are relaxed and still the weather is good. But just back about you a little bit, Sala. So you're really a polyglot, and it's not just your language prowess, but also your extensive know-how of the real estate industry that makes you a formidable international asset, doesn't it, Sala?
Well, I suppose so. I would say that I've always been working in international companies and international fields. And that's one reason why I joined Drezzo, because I had the opportunity again to work across borders and work with different people in different languages and on very interesting projects.
Great. So we are very, very excited to have you on board, and we just can't wait to kick off the rapid fire round. Daniela, do you want to take a stab at it?
Sure. So Sala, we're curious. You're an architect and a designer, and after 25 years of experience, if you had a chance to time travel, what would your alternate career choice be and why?
Thank you, Daniela. Could I choose rather to go forward and not backwards in the time travel option? For me, future is much more interesting and exciting than looking back. And about my past. So when I was very young, I wanted to be an artist, maybe a graphic designer. I loved typography, the letters, drawings and illustrations. So I became a graphic designer first, but it was all very two-dimensional. So around my 20s, I thought I want to develop things further. So I was lucky to get into the university to study architecture and get the third dimension into the design. If I'm really honest, I should have gone and read more philosophy or studied philosophy in the university to think about the fourth and the fifth dimension. And another thing that intrigues me is that, or puzzles me, is that why didn't I study fashion design? I love fabrics and clothes.
Yeah, but, you know, there is still a lot of time, but I'm sure your work keeps you busy. But yeah, to the next question then. What are the three must-haves, according to you, in the office that can keep one going through the day? And we're not talking about basic amenities like toilet or toilet paper.
Well, it's quite simple, isn't it? It's people. It's the team, it's the people, it's the community. That's the only way you really become fulfilled, is because you have people around you. Without people, I would say there is no office. There's no point going somewhere if there's no one there. And without a team, and belonging, it would be completely senseless to do the work. So I would say that without creative thinking and collaboration, there would be also no achievements and no fulfillment. So as I'm talking about this, I think it's a little bit like Maslow's pyramid of hierarchy. So it's all the upper parts that are the most interesting and most important. Physiological needs and safety needs should be everywhere and should be available to everybody in any office. I once heard a real estate developer say that, you know, if you can't provide those, you would probably be sued.
Well, related to that, the last question from this round, last but not least, a hot topic. So what do you prefer, home office or the regular office? Or is there an alternative that can bring the best of both the worlds?
I think if you look at the very recent studies made by the big universities and famous universities, so it's probably that choice is the best of all worlds, so that you can choose. So you can work sometimes from home when you feel like being alone, but the days that you really feel like being with your team or with your peers or clients or family or other people, just that, you know, you can choose either you work in the office or you can work in even in somebody else's office, or you can work from home as well. So I think the new normal and the best of all is to be autonomous and have the freedom to choose where you work and when you work and with whom you work.
Absolutely. So more flexibility all around. So that was a quick lowdown on Sala, your personal taste on the workplace. And now in the course of the next half an hour or so, she will open the door into the world of the office and why has it become such an integral part of our lives now. Over to you, Daniela, for the first question.
We are living in times of hyper-individualization. Everything needs to be tailored to the taste of the user. Why do you think that has been an evolving trend for the last few years?
The trend at the moment is setting the user in the center, focusing on the user, focusing on the user's needs and the user's ability to govern and determine his own environment, working environment or educational environment, whatever environment the user is using.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you do mention this user focus and user governance. What do we exactly mean by this? What is user experience? And can you trace its genesis? Since when did it start to get importance within real estate?
User experience is about designing for people. It has its origins in product design. I would like to quote the founder of UX to enlighten the meaning and the purpose. So the term user experience probably originated already in 1990s at Apple when the cognitive psychologist Donald Norman joined the Apple team. And he defined user experience, I quote, "User experience encompasses all aspects of the end user's interaction with the company, its services, and its products." Very quickly, UX became successful and spread across the Silicon Valley in product design. In the real estate world, probably the very early adoption was in retail, where, of course, appealing, frictionless, positive, and satisfying experiences are essential in order to get the customer coming back. And Drayson Sommer, somewhere around 6 years ago, we started developing real estate usability term and what it captures further. And we came up with real estate user experience. So we adapted the definition of Don Norman towards buildings and real estate. So I would then say that real estate user experience encompasses all aspects of the end user's interaction with the building, its services, and its brand. For us, designing with people came the foundation. For us, designing for and with people became the foundation of the real estate UX.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. And Maybe we should use important differentiation. So what are the fundamentals that set UX apart from interior designing, for example?
Interior designing or architecture, I think, is very much to design functional, but also, of course, beautiful interiors or buildings for people. They are very often driven by the designer's skills and capability and preferences and the designer's approach. Whereas, of course, the user experience is focusing on the needs and the requirements and the aspiration of the user itself. So it derives from research. And you first have to profile the users. You have to understand who they are and what their basic needs are. And then very often a co-creative process, engaging different users or representatives of the users, you design an interior or a building that is much more tailored towards the needs of the user and a result of an interaction and engagement with the user. The other thing is that it differences from interior design is maybe that the definition is about the end user's interaction with the space, but also with virtual space. So the technology provided in the space, the services that are provided in the space, and the brand and the brand message and the brand values that are also part of the space. So it encompasses more aspects than just the physical interior design.
Right. You make a very valid point about the end user's interaction with the space. Now, over the last year and a half, the majority of the global workforce has found ease within the four walls of their homes. Now, what elements do you think will make the office more attractive to pull them out from the comforts of their couch?
What will pull people back to the office is absolutely other people, the community, the socializing, the engaging, the working together in a team with a team. But also, if you look at the most recent academic studies, you can see that they point out that the pandemic has shown us what autonomy, or maybe for many, the lack of autonomy means. And by now, all employees are used to arranging their physical work environment and, of course, governing their work spot. But even more important is deciding where to work and how to work. In other words, people are more autonomous. So I think next to the social community, probably more flexibility and choice and more autonomy to decide where to work, when to work, how to work, will pull people back to the office successfully.
And what about employee well-being? Because this is also gradually becoming intrinsic to the scope of UX, more and more important. So how far has the pandemic catapulted a change in this aspect?
If I think about it from a physical health point of view, so distancing is very important now from our health perspective. And it will be even more important because we are facing this extremely painful question about how do we deal with vaccinated versus non-vaccinated. And that will have a clear impact also on how do we in the future design our workplaces and how much space do we design around people. The other thing is, of course, our mental health. So we have learned a very hard lesson from the forced home working experiment. And it has shown us how important the physical contact and face-to-face contact and presence is for our well-being. So actually the two are slightly contradicting because other one requires space, the other one requires presence and less distancing. So it's a very interesting sort of a new design aspect to the workplace.
Mm-hmm. You touched upon mental well-being, but are there some unrealistic but typical requests from clients that drive you totally crazy? Why do they want them and why are they so hard to achieve these demands?
The most difficult situation usually is when the request is very blurry, when the client or the developer doesn't know what needs to be designed or even more why it needs to be designed. So for us, we cannot design just something. we really need to design something that has a vision, something that's based on a strategy, something that is meaningful. Without all this, you cannot design. Good design has to have always a purpose. I can tell you a short story about a client who wanted a building, but could not tell why he wanted the building. He still doesn't know.
He came to us and he had around 36 million euros and he wanted a new building. And we asked him why, and he couldn't answer.
Mm-hmm.
How can you design a building for 36 million euros if the client doesn't know why he wants a building?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I'm saying is that I think that's the most difficult part. And that's where we always step in and we say that let's take a breath. Let's mm-hmm. go back one step and let's start. Let's first think why and answer the why question. Create a vision, mm-hmm. create a strategy and a meaning for the design, whether it's a building or a space or an environment or a city, whatever it is, but it has to have a purpose.
Sure. Yeah, that's the aspect of defining the right goals is really central. And how is there any tactics and ways for you to strike a balance between expectations of clients and what is feasible, maybe what is possible?
We always ask the why question. We don't ask what do you want. We ask why. And when we have the answer to the why question, so when we have a vision and when we have ambition and the needs and the insights, so of course, then it's much easier for us to design something good, something sustainable and something robust, because we can prioritize the resources. So you are sort of like designing the right thing from the beginning. And I think that's the same way of course, when you're doing that. So it is an engagement. It is an interaction, an interactive process, so that you're constantly talking with your client about why you're doing things and why are you prioritizing. So it is much more common sense or a sort of common direction.
So sometimes probably changes during this process. And how do you deal with that? And or how do you also deal with different stakeholders and their different expectations?
It's always about, it's like asking the questions so that you are sort of like, and how we ask the questions is that we never ask our clients, what do you need or what do you want or how many do you want or how many square meters? We always ask our clients, what do you do? How do you do it? Why do you do it? When do you do it? With whom do you do it? And we make the analysis and we make the conclusions and we feedback the conclusions and we discuss the conclusions and we ask, are we right with our conclusions? And then once you have that, so then of course you can again design against something that you really know that that's the intention and that's purposeful.
Right. So you make a very interesting point about this why aspect, the role of data, user feedback. And do you also conduct surveys while developing the US concept of a property?
Our process is always based on user data and user feedback. We collect data very thoroughly. When we have relevant data and thorough insights and understanding of the requirements, we can design more spot on. We collect and process both subjective and objective data. Objective data is always observed data or data collected through beacon sensors or other devices. When we collect people's perception, what I call subjective data, we actually never ask people, what do you want or what do you need? We always ask people, what do you do? How do you do it? When do you do it? With whom do you do it? Why do you do it? We actually analyze and conclude and use our experience from other clients, other projects, other collaborators and databases to create or to co-create the concept. I think it is fundamental that you have enough data and your designs are based on data. we rarely improvise without any data or any knowledge of the user.
And speaking about data, what about technology in general? What role will it play? And is it going to really make life simpler and more efficient in the workplace?
Yes, I think that technology will play a huge part. It will actually overrule everything in the workplace of the future, except for the human contact and the physical contact and the real people. And I always say that every building should be a smart building. Mm-hmm. The same way we create buildings, that every building has to have ventilation. I would say that the same way in the future, all the buildings will be smart buildings. And I would say that you probably wouldn't be able to sell or rent out the building if it's not smart in a close future already, because smart buildings make our lives so much easier. It makes our days much more frictionless. It makes our user experience much better.
Right. So you talk about smart technology. Now, change is something that is a constant. Everyday external factors influence real estate. Considering this, can we ever make the workplace future-proof? If yes, what will be the deal breaker?
We all know that the future workplace needs to be agile. By now, I think we all are used to customized services based on our preferences, steered and generated by big data of us and how we behave. I think the physical environment, even if it was on wheels, can never be as flexible as the virtual or digital environment around us. So therefore, as a designer of flexible and agile workplaces and working environments, I say that I can only design variety, diversity, and increase choice for the users. I personally believe that multicultural, diverse environments with a very big variety of services and good, smart applications to find people, services, and to adjust the environment to your own choices will provide people the preferred place, and also will provide people to be able to find their own community and where they feel satisfied and happy. In other words, their personal great experience. So the deal breaker would be customized environments and autonomy and governance to the user of the environment.
Well, one thing is really clear, that we are in a transitional phase. Things are moving thick and fast, and we need to factor in all our surroundings, the environment, technological upgrades, and most importantly, as Sala, you pointed out, their interface with you, the user. Really appreciate you joining us today, Sala, and unpacking the various nuances around the workplace of the future. I'm sure our listeners have a lot of takeaways. Any final thoughts from you, Daniela?
Yeah, thank you. Very interesting insights from Sala. And personally, I feel very grateful to live in times when the user gets the deserved attention. Mm-hmm. So, because as we've heard, the more comfortable and happier we feel at our workplace, the more everyone will benefit. So it seems to be a win-win situation for all stakeholders, employees, employers. Probably it's safe to say for our society in general. What do you think, Sala?
Yeah, absolutely, you're right. And I think it was great to have this chat with you. And I'm really happy that you sort of had so many questions. I didn't think about it. And I hope that we've covered some of the topics that are really interesting for all our listeners. So, and that we could keep on going the conversation.
Yes.
And facing the future.
Yes.
And the change.
Absolutely. That's the deal breaker, really, to keep the conversation growing. Thank you both for your thoughts and perspectives. And that's the time we have today. And you, our dear listeners, hope you enjoyed our fireside chat with Sala. If you want to get in touch with her, you can email us or connect with Sala directly on LinkedIn. Till then, keep tuning into Blue Waves for such deep insights from the world of real estate. Stay safe and take care. Bye now.
Bye.